WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Barbara Bogave, sitting in for Terry Gross. We're featuring an interview Terry did earlier this week. At a baseball game, you can hear the crack of the bat. But at a football game, the crack you'd be most likely to hear is a bone. But broken bones are just one of the hazards of the sport. For 7 years, from 1983 to 1990, Dr. Rob Huizenga was team internist for the Los Angeles Raiders. He took care of any internal injuries, head injuries, lacerations, and infections. He also helped players be more aware of their overall health, working with them on everything from overcoming jet lag to improving their diets. Huizenga is a former president of the National Football League Physicians Association. Now he teaches medicine at UCLA. He's written a new book about his experiences in the NFL. It's called You're Okay, It's Just a Bruise. Terry asked Dr. Huizenga what a typical halftime was like for him.
Well, halftimes were mass units. You know, we'd have players that were dehydrated, that you were pumping in fluids, you know, essentially not like putting in IVs in an emergency room, but essentially more like, you know, changing a tire in 10 seconds at the Indianapolis 500. We'd have players that had cuts and scratches, often need to suture players. Of course, there would be a whole sundry of various orthopedic, you know, knee, shoulder bangs. And occasionally, obviously, we'd have people that were dinged in the head and would have to do several neurologic exams. One halftime I always like to refer to was, you know, a particularly brutal halftime we had once in Chicago, where they had this horrendous turf where I think people really forgot to change the, there's a rug underneath artificial turf. And this half was especially notable. But, you know, I always tell people that that was one game where you could give a medical score. And basically it was the Raiders at halftime, 3 concussions, 1 blown out knee, 1 blown up thumb, 1 chin laceration, 2 lost teeth, 1 displaced filling, and about 2 square yards of forearm skin, you know, lost to that artificial turf versus Chicago in that particular game. 1 bruised foot, a twisted elbow, and one urgent hospitalization for a lacerated kidney noted when their quarterback, Jim McMahon, couldn't stop urinating blood at halftime.
Wow. So I guess the artificial turf is pretty bad for players and for doctors.
I think it is. You know, there's only really been one study. This is something that football buffs go over time and time again. Only one real good scientific study, and it did show that on pass players, the running backs don't get more injuries, but the linemen do. And on running plays, the running backs seem to get more injuries. And I don't think it takes a government grant to figure out that if you're going to get plummeled straight backward and you're a quarterback, your brain's going to prefer, you know, going into sod over cement. But, you know, it's a money issue. You know, we can put grass in every stadium. It's a question of, you know, it costs more when you get the rock concert in, when you get the motocross racing and whatnot. And, you know, I think it comes right down to, you know, how many, you know, knee operations and maybe artificial knees down the line are you willing to sacrifice for how much extra money to the stadium operator?
My guest is Dr. Rob Huizenga, and he was the doctor for the Raiders. He now teaches at UCLA and is the author of the new book, You're Okay, It's Just a Bruise. You write that there's a fuzzy boundary between good medicine and good team doctoring. What's a typical situation where those two are at odds?
Well, as a team doctor, you're paid for by an owner that has purchased a club possibly for $200 million and is paying $34 million plus in salaries. And many of these people are incredibly successful businessmen, and they start to view the team as a product, so many widgets or paper clips that they're going to have to maneuver somehow to turn a profit. And the only way to turn a profit is to get your players, specifically the better players, out on the field constantly. So there are many, many pressures that the team doctor feels. The pressures can be as minor as, you know, let's be part of the team, that rah-rah, all-for-one experience, which sometimes can get the doctor carried away subconsciously in emotion, to owners specifically going up to doctors and saying, you're not tough enough, or owners specifically going up to players and requesting they take pain-killing shots in ankles and knees, which may potentially pose a long-term health benefit to them, or owners essentially implying to both players and doctors that if they don't play tough, if they don't play with injuries, they may not be with the club anymore.
Were there pressures on you as the team doctor to send back into the game injured players?
Well, again, there were pressures, and again, those are difficult to enumerate, but in our situation specifically, there was a team orthopedist who was very close to the owner who was sending in players. For instance, we had a safety who got in a collision and fractured his larynx, the voice box, you know, that protrudes in the mid-neck. This is an injury that can prove extremely serious. If all of a sudden you get swelling or bleeding in that injury, it can put pressure on your windpipe and occlude breathing, and obviously that can be fatal. This particular player, you know, I evaluated, said, you're out of here, and started taking him back to the locker room to do various things and to get in a position that if we needed to emergently stick tubes in to assist his breathing, if it did get plugged up, that would go. When we assessed that everything was stable and I just had him sitting on the sideline and went away to do other things, the orthopedic surgeon said, you're okay to go in. And of course, the players are so hepped up and juiced up that, you know, they will do, you know, whatever. And they're dying to get into the game and prove how tough they are, for better or worse. And so, you know, I pretty much had to go out and tackle this person to bring him back. That's the sort of everyday conflicts that I ran into.
What kinds of pills were the players taking when you got to the team?
Well, when I got to the team in the early 80s, again, I didn't see much use of recreational drugs, cocaine, marijuana, narcotics, compared to the use that you would expect in a similarly aged group right out of college. Actually, the use was quite low in these athletes. What I did see was a high use of vocational drugs, things that were necessary for them to stay in professional sports and earn a paycheck during that brief flickering career. And those substances, obviously anabolic steroids, later, of course, much that was hid from me, like growth hormone, I found out more use of that than I had initially suspected. And, of course, amphetamines, which are widely used in many sports, especially baseball, but certainly also in football. And these substances, again, anabolic steroids were perfectly legal, and the players that were using them tended to be getting prescriptions from doctors outside the club. And it, in the instance of Lyle Alzado, which, of course, has gotten the most press, you know, I would go to an athlete like Lyle and say, in his specific instance, Lyle, this is the worst-looking cholesterol I've ever seen in my life. What are you doing to yourself? You've got blood in the urine. You know, and I told him, when I run out on the field, I don't know if you're having a heart attack or you pulled a muscle. I mean, your cholesterol is that worrisome. And he would scream and yell and say, I've got these steroid-prescribing doctors, and they tell me my body's handling it just fine. Now, what are you going to tell a player? What he's doing is perfectly legal. All you can do, like your patients that smoke cigarettes, is counsel them against doing them.
My guest is Dr. Rob Huizenga, and he is the former doctor for the Los Angeles Raiders, and he's written a new book about that period of his life called You're Okay, It's Just a Bruise, A Doctor's Sideline Secrets About Pro Football's Most Outrageous Team. We're going to take a short break and then talk some more. This is Fresh Air. Back with Dr. Rob Huizenga, and he's the former doctor for the Los Angeles Raiders and the former head of the NFL Physicians Association. When you were with the Raiders, did you find that a lot of players tried to fake their way through medical exams, either through lying about their medical history so that you wouldn't try to keep them off the field, or faking their urine tests when drug testing came into play?
Well, you see a little of everything. The first time I was exposed to this experience was when we go down to the combine. Every team doctor from all the 28 teams, both the orthopedists and the internists, go down and evaluate the top 300 prospects out of college. And I was shocked. Every person coming down the line denied any past medical problem. And it struck me, you know, my whole life I had been in a situation where people are paying money to come see the doctor and they have a list of complaints. Here, it was something totally different. It was detective medicine. They would tell you everything was fine in every body system, and it was your job to try to figure out, did they abuse drugs? Did they really have, you know, a heart condition that would lower their ability to be someone that would contribute to a football team? And it was really sad that you put a doctor in a position to be an adversary to someone. And I had never even thought of that. And, of course, that same philosophy continues on in the team, where the doctor could be in a position to make the athlete get a lot less money on the next contract if you find out that they're somehow medically flawed. And so then they withhold this medical information, and that may prove deleterious to their long-term health as well. And that's also something that I want to make sure that doctors aren't put in a position to be the adversary for the players, because that also isn't right.
How do you get around that?
Well, I think that you need a independent doctor. You can't have a doctor for the owner. In other words, how would you like it if you're working for that radio station and they appoint me as your doctor and I'm getting paid by the radio station? So you come to me with a terrible case of laryngitis and say, should I do my show or not? And I say, well, of course you should do your show. Now, you look at me and now who is calling the shots? Is it the guy that's paying my bill, or do I really have your best interests at heart? And it's an untenable position, not only when you look at that inherent conflict of interest, but also the pressure and the emotion involved in sport today, and specifically in professional football. So you've got to make the doctor independent. You got to take him out from under the thumb of the team owner.
You were the head of the NFL Physicians Association, and you write at the end of the book that now the NFL Physicians Association is trying to work against private hospitals who want to contract with the NFL. What kind of deals do the private hospitals want?
Well, if you can believe it, and this is really what it's come down to, as you well know, modern medicine today, we had the advent of these for-profit hospital chains that go out and try to do whatever it takes to get the right PR to get more patients. Well, obviously, it's a nice feather in your cap to be the team hospital and then to appoint your doctors to be the doctors for a professional franchise. And as it turns out, there are two new franchises, one in Florida and one in Charlotte, North Carolina, who, believe it or not, basically, the club said, hey, you want to be the team hospital, you want to be the team doctors, well, how much are you willing to pay? And the bidding in the Florida team definitely got up to $1 million. So imagine the plight now of the poor player. You're stuck in a position where the team, you know, this huge multi-billion dollar team monopoly of football, now jumps in bed with this multi-billion dollar medical hospital chain, and they're both kind of seeking profits. Where the heck do you think the poor player, you know, his medical needs are going to come when you have that type of financial union?
You left the NFL over medical disagreements. Do you miss professional sports?
Well, absolutely. I'm somebody that has a tremendous personal interest in sports, both from a personal and a research level. And I think that when I left, I'll be honest, you know, it was upsetting. You know, I felt that I had done everything in the player's best interest. And then to have to leave because, you know, I wouldn't play a player that was hurt. And it just was upsetting. And then to have the owner, again, when I was unable to say anything because all of the reasons why I left were patient-doctor confidentiality, and before the various players allowed me to say what I said in the book, for them to come out in Sports Illustrated and say that they had fired me, it really did get my gall that these multi-billion-dollar people think they can just push people around like so many pawns on a chessboard, and that the fans will just keep coming if the team wins and there's no personal accountability. I will say that that upset me.
What rules and equipment changes do you think could be made pretty easily that would make football a safer sport but still an exciting sport to watch?
Well, the first thing that we need to do is we need to get more information. We need to find out really what the risks are in turf, multiple concussions, you know, and other collisions, and excuse me, the peculiarities of weight gain and the exact effects of all these drugs that players feel they need to take vocationally, from steroids to growth hormone to amphetamines, and of course, you know, the effect of these numbing shots. Knowledge is the basis for making any recommendation, and we're sorely missing in that, and the NFL is blocking appropriate research. So that's number one. Number two is you have to have a mechanism where this research, if it is done, can be parlayed into rules changes. You ask what could be done right now. Well, there's obviously common sense things. I saw instances where, say, Jim Plunkett, who was a star quarterback for the Raiders, was picked up, thrown violently on his shoulder, which was an obvious illegal play. What happened was the San Francisco 49ers were penalized 15 yards, and Jim Plunkett had surgery on his shoulder and was out for the rest of his career, essentially. So it doesn't make any sense to have a 15-yard penalty versus something like that. The player that does that certainly should be out of action as long as the player that he's injured on an illegal hit. That's number one. Number two It's absurd that we have a system where a rushing defensive player gets one free step after a quarterback has released the ball. Imagine the most vulnerable position. You've just thrown a ball. Your arms extended. You're leaning forward. You have no defenses. And then you have a 325-pound individual that's barreling at you, that hits you at full speed and knocks you as hard as they can, in many instances, off AstroTurf, which is essentially concrete. That makes no sense. Many other sports, that's absolutely outlawed. And that's a common sense sort of thing. In the old days, they didn't even have to have a rule, because all the rushing linemen, there was a sportsmanship thing. They would ease up and, if necessary, grab the quarterback so that he wouldn't fall down. Now, many of the coaches, or certainly the players, feel that you knock out these key players and you can win the game. And so there really, I believe, is much more of an intent to injure now. And so, unfortunately, we have to legislate very tightly to try to protect athletes who are in a position, a bodily position, where they are unable to protect themselves.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Rob Huizenga is the former internist for the Los Angeles Raiders. He's the author of the new book, You're Okay, It's Just a Bruise. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.